Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation, heard at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network, and each week we provide you with information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and recreational cannabis industry. W420RadioNetwork.com. Time now for the lowdown on another high-time experience. Here's 420 lifestyle correspondent Rich Walkoff.
Well, this is a panoply of creative, talented, amazing people here at the MJ Biz Conference in Las Vegas, the largest weed conference in the world, and it's the 10th anniversary. And on our America's Cannabis Conversation today, we're joined by Kit Grimes, who is an amazing woman I just met, a dynamo in so many ways. She works with the Edible Incredible and also the Chief Strategy Officer for Minorities for Medical Marijuana, M4MM. So I guess giving back and helping to create opportunities for minorities like yourself has got to be an awesome experience for you.
It is beyond amazing. It is a great experience to be able to bridge the missing gap in the industry, which is the people, right? The people of color, BIPOC people who have blood, sweat, and tears in the industry. But when we got into it back in the legacy market, you know, it was the war on drugs and it was the gateway drug. And so it didn't have the same connotation that it does now. And I'm super happy to be able to help people really get into the industry in that way.
Well, how is it going from stigma to a super, you know, career opportunity?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so amazing to answer the question. Being that I live in North Carolina and our market is still a very, you know, infantile growing one, to be able to be at the level that I am in the industry and really help people learn from a very basic standpoint of the industry isn't just, you know, flower and it's not just, you know, grows and dispensaries. It's so vast. And to be able to give that back to people has been amazing.
Yeah. Now, you say the organization for the minorities in medical in the marijuana industry, based in Orlando. You are working out of Charlotte, but in Orlando, you're in North Carolina for your Edible Incredible. You're in Orlando, Florida, for the minority involvement in marijuana. Two states that don't exactly embrace the culture.
You know what? I will say Florida is growing in the growing of the culture. They do have a medical program, so it's slow to grow, but it's got a couple seeds in the ground, you know, a little sprouting going on. In North Carolina, on the other hand, though, we don't have a medical program. We only have our CBD or cannabis dispensaries, and, you know, these different dispensaries, they have different things that they can sell that you wouldn't necessarily know are legal in North Carolina. So it's a growing footprint, but it's still a conversation that I'm happy I'm able to have because I really get people's wheels turning.
Yeah.
You know?
Now tell me again, in North Carolina, as I understand it, recreational marijuana is not allowed. And you're saying medical marijuana is legal?
So no. So adult use, we don't have an adult use program. We don't have a medical program, but we do have, you know, our CBD dispensaries, our hemp. But a lot of the times people don't realize that there are a lot of dispensaries that, you know, from CBD to THCO, which is a new strand or a new cultivar that's out now, that, you know, is actually legal in dispensaries in states that don't have a medical or adult use program.
So that surprises me. You have dispensaries, but it's not legal with medical or recreational marijuana in North Carolina. This is a unique niche.
It is, and we have a lot. So there are different vape companies, there are different plant touching that have flower or cannabis in their dispensaries. And you can actually go, and they have everything from CBD all the way up to the new THCO. They have Delta 8, they have Delta 10. It's always that pesky Delta 9 that everyone gets all up in a bunch about. But they definitely have a wide variety of strains and just different things that people can actually partake in, edibles and in the dispensaries in North Carolina. So it's amazing.
And you were telling me about your ice cream. This is a kick. You got to share that story.
Okay, so I am a creative Like, I can create anything. Before I was actually in cannabis, I was actually a creative makeup artist. So doing special effects makeup for, like, movies and, like, events is my jam. When it comes down to creating things, I'm super... That's just how my brain works. And so in my infusions, one of the infusions I teach is how to infuse milk with cannabis. So whether it's CBD all the way up to THCO, you can actually infuse your milk. And then now you use your infused milk as the medium within your infused ice cream. So you get this amazing experience and a cool snack.
Just amazing. You get the munchies, you eat the ice cream, you get the munchies, you eat the ice cream. I mean, that's like the never-ending cycle.
Look, it's the cycle that's good for me, right? You need more ice cream? I got more ice cream. You ate all your ice cream? No worries.
I got the munchies. I got to eat more ice cream. Well, what's your favorite flavor, and how potent is your loaded ice cream?
Ooh, so we sell it in an 8-ounce jar. They are pretty potent because we don't use, I guess, we use industry standards when we're working with the industry as far as like dispensaries and companies like that. But when we make it, our clientele likes a good bang with their punch. So yeah. I always tell people I have repeat offenders. You will be back. As far as the favorite flavor, so far I would probably say it's either my pineapple ice cream, which is a pineapple flavored ice cream that actually also has infused pineapple fruit chunks in it. Or it would be our caramel toffee crunch. It's a caramel flavored ice cream with chocolate and toffee pieces mixed up.
And you said 8-ounce container. How much THC?
It's probably going to be on the end of 500 milligrams, something around that. So it's a pretty potent.
That is some serious rocky road to the moon.
It's definitely one of those that you will come back. So we do little pop-ups and things in North Carolina. You know, it's still, whereas we're very city, we're still very much country connected, if you will. And I do a pop-up there on the weekends on occasion. And I literally have people that as soon as they see my truck pull up, they're like, oh, she's here. And they start this mad dash like, you got my ice cream?
Oh my gosh.
We do things like candy grapes, like, you know, people are like, wait, what? And it's like, no, it's actually infused candy that we make. We actually take and dip frozen grapes in the candy, and then we take the candy and roll it in crushed Jolly Ranchers.
Oh my gosh. Now, again, I don't understand how you're navigating the laws that are so restrictive in North Carolina to create and market this.
So you can sell food and beverages anywhere, right? And you can sell infused food and beverages anywhere. It's all about how you word, and it's all about being smarter than those who would hope that you're not. It's also about making sure that your business is set up for different things that you wouldn't even think about. So we're actually registered with the Department of Agriculture as a CBD or an hemp processor for North Carolina. So we're able to work within those caveats. Also within my website and online, we don't have anything that specifically says CBD, THC, but it definitely says infusion. And everybody knows, like I tell, we're a culinary experience with a twist.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I'll tell you what, we're talking with Kit Grimes, the edible, incredible culinary experience with a twist, is her moniker, and she also works for Minorities for Medical Marijuana and Social Equity, a chief strategy officer. This is the America's Cannabis Conversation. I'm Rich Walkoff. Hey, so here's the thing. We all know so many minorities have been profiled, have been unduly or inordinately punished and prosecuted and convicted for marijuana offenses. Many of them are, those records have been expunged, but many have not still. So getting in the industry, if you've got a track record, if you've got a record, you don't get an opportunity.
You know what? It's one of those, it's a sad thing, right? So you went to jail for selling something that's now...
Or possession.
Like, right. You're absolutely right. Like, to give you an idea, on Netflix, there's a documentary called The Grass is Greener. And we actually did a roundtable panel with Fab Five Freddy, because he was one of the producers, talking about, like, you know, what happens in the industry from that standpoint. And it's kind of crazy when you really look at it, because the one guy that was in the movie, he literally went to jail because he was on his third strike, right? Granted, he was on his third strike. We understand that, right? They have the three strike laws in some states. But it was for having less than a gram of marijuana. And because
it's like shake on the floor of your car.
It's like you vacuumed it up and said, look at the miracle, let me roll this, right? But literally, because he was still on probation for 10 years, and he was 9 years and 6 months in. And they literally violated him for that and put him in jail. I want to say it was almost 10 years because that's how much time he had left or whatever the case is. So when we get the opportunity to really help people get rid of their marijuana charges and get them into a space where they're growing and they're actually being benefited by the industry that basically tried to knock them down, it's nothing better to see. You know, it's an amazing thing.
I love to hear that story. How prevalent are those stories, the recovery, the renaissance, the second chance? Are you seeing more and more? I know you're an advocate for that.
Absolutely. We see it a lot. Like, you know, a lot of our members here, you know, some are very beginning in the beginnings of their businesses and of their organizations and of the things that they're trying to grow. So to be able to kind of bridge that gap and have all of those people here, you know, in the different facets and really being able to match make and say, mm-hmm. you know what? What you do isn't something that I do, but now I have people I know can help you out in that
right.
way. To really see people grow out of the space of criminalization and, you know, and we're building up the destigmatization, you know the word.
Yeah.
But
take away the stigma.
Exactly. Now that we're getting rid of the stigma that has really put us in just the negative for
right.
the industry, now we're on the positive side of it, or we're at least getting more to the positive side. I've had conversations with people who feel like, oh, well, if they've been to jail, you know, they can't possibly be good business people because it's like you're taking apples and you're trying to make, you know, oranges and they don't match. It's like just because they didn't do it the right way when they
sure.
did it doesn't mean
yeah.
that they're not absolutely great business people. It's about taking the mindset of what they had behind their business model before
right.
and placing it into one that is not only sustainable, but allows them to grow without having to worry about the legalities that put them back.
Right. Now, is there an affirmative action type of program for new marijuana industry ventures, or is it basically you got to fend for yourself as a minority seeking opportunities in the industry?
So they do have social equity programs, and like there's rules behind social equity. Social equity can sometimes stronghold you in a certain ways. So they'll say you have to have this, and you can't have any of this. But in order to be a part of this, now you have to have $10 million. So I was a criminal, and I'm finally getting my record expunged, and I've been affected by the war on drugs, and I've lived in my state for so long, and I don't have, you know, everything, like all the other records, but then now you're saying, yeah, you've got all the things you need to get in, but hey, now we need $10 million from you because we require a vertical setup, and you have to have all of these things in place before you can actually even start to open and operate. How does one, especially people of color, who are really, really working hard to get into the industry, who may not have the billions
sure,
of dollars,
sure.
who may not have those kinds of resources.
Who probably don't, of course.
You know, look, does somebody want to give it to me? I mean.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you stronghold them like that, how do they really grow? Like, it winds up making them feel like I should have just stayed in the legacy market or the, you know, and so to see that people are being able to not have to be stronghold in that way. But, you know, social equity is what it is. It's not a bad deal at all. You know, we work hard to make sure that the equity portion is there because a lot of states, they have the language, but they might as well be speaking gibberish, you know,
right,
like,
right.
And we don't speak gibberish. We speak dollars. We speak English. We speak, give me, you know, and the language that's in it right now, especially, I can give you a story on that. Like the language for North Carolina, you literally have to have 50 grand like to even open your first location. Any location after that is an additional 5 grand. You also have to pay 10% of your gross sales monthly to the Department of Human and Health Services. So if we take that into perspective, let's say that you're doing fabulous and you're making 100 grand a month in your business. By the end of the year, you have paid 120 grand to the Department of Health and Human Services, and you haven't paid for anything else. You haven't paid overhead. You haven't paid costs. You haven't paid business expenses. And that is a travesty in itself.
Yeah.
And then even with another bill that they have what they call the Care for Needs, Not Weed Act. So basically, if you are a person who receives public assistance in North Carolina, they want to make it where they stronghold you and don't allow you to use your card in dispensaries. So now they're trying to tell you what your need for the weed is, and it's kind of like, no matter what, you try to find a caveat to make it where we can't grow and be great. And this is why we do it. We do it. We're happy to do it.
Well, you're doing awesome, and I love it. It's conscious capitalism in the cannabis world with Kit Grimes from The Edible Incredible, and maybe more importantly, The Minorities for Medical Marijuana on Social Equity. Great catching up with you. Great meeting you here at MJ BizCon on the America's Cannabis Conversation. I'm Rich Walcott on the W420 Radio Network. Stick around.
Are you interested in learning more about cannabis? Have you thought about starting your own cannabis business but don't know how? If so, we invite you to join the Cannabis Conversation with other people like you who are looking at the exciting opportunities in this exploding business. Listen to America's Cannabis Conversation. You'll hear from industry experts and get insights into the cannabis industry. For archived shows and for more information, log on to americascannabisconversation.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It's a pleasure to introduce Olivia Alexander, former beauty queen, current cannabis influencer, beauty industry insider, podcaster, was named Dope Magazine's 2017 Social Media Influencer of the Year and named by Green Entrepreneur as one of the 35 most influential women in cannabis. She's the founder and CEO of Kush Queen, a multi-million dollar brand carrying THC-infused and CBD-only products. Olivia, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Olivia, let's start at the very beginning. As a little girl growing up in Louisiana, did you ever imagine this would be your future?
100% no. I was a DARE kid. I grew up in a small town. When I was in third grade, my best friend's brother was actually murdered buying weed in our town. And I grew up with a very stigmatized view of cannabis. And there is absolutely no way I could have ever imagined this would be my life.
Sounds about right. So interesting how people end up in the industry. I also wanted to bring up and mention that you originally started this foray into this industry in 2005 with being a bud tender at a dispensary. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm incredibly proud to have started as a bud tender back in the medical days, gray area medical. And it's really where I fell in love with the plant. I tried cannabis for the first time when I was 18, about my second week in college. I was pretty shocked, mind blown, if you will, because I didn't burn down anything. Nothing bad happened. I just slept through the night, and I had been struggling with my mental health and insomnia and sleeping for most of my teenage years. And very quickly, I felt completely in love with the plant. And then I was able to become a bud tender through some friends who were opening up a shop. And it really was just that moment for me where I knew cannabis was it for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And you come from a wellness perspective. How is that also the impetus for starting your company?
Well, I worked in the industry for so many years. I worked in a dispensary that was operated by women, but run by men. I worked for so many cannabis companies throughout the years, again, that were operated by women and run by men. And also everything around me, from the cannabis cups to the type of marketing my clients even wanted to do, and the kind of content people wanted me to post on my Instagram feeds at that time when I was an influencer, was really all the 18 to 35 year old male stoner. And that's great and all, but that wasn't how I was using cannabis. Sure, I loved to get high, but for me, using cannabis every single day, morning, noon, and night, was about my endocannabinoid system. It was about my wellness. It was about sleeping, eating, feeling better, and living my best life. And I didn't relate to it. And so when I finally got the opportunity to really pursue Kush Queen, for me, I wanted to create a brand that spoke to everyone else, that was for people who didn't feel like they were a part of the culture, and that made cannabis products as approachable as possible.
So you actively in your company are trying to break stereotypes in the industry, and who feels, you know, as an audience, that they could benefit from it, break all those stigmas. You know, one of the really important things I wanted to ask you is, because you are such a female advocate in this industry, how much have you seen it change for the better for women and the time you've been in it? And what are some of the major obstacles do you think we still need to overcome moving forward?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. I mean, back in the day when I was just a bud tender and when I worked for brands, you know, women were bud tenders, they were booth girls, they were promo girls. And I mean, I remember having my Kush Queen booth out at the Cannabis Cup in the literal shadow of like Brass Knuckles or one of those brands. And they had like literal strip club built into their booth. It was just a certain type of experience in a certain place for women. And for me personally, being out at the Cannabis Cup, I was very young. I saw Corey Thomas from Honey Pot Bear on the stage winning a Cannabis Cup. And that was a really big moment for me in seeing a woman who owned the company, who was a product maker. And it really was like that moment where I saw who I could be. And the industry has just obviously changed night and day. And there are more women now than ever, from hosts like yourself to influencers to owners. I think the biggest thing that I want to see women overcome is really getting those licenses, really, really more on the plant touching side. I think that it's still very male dominated. We still only have one woman running a publicly traded cannabis company, and the numbers have actually declined in the past few years when it comes to women in cannabis. So it's really important to me that people know that you can have whatever place in this industry that you want. You just have to believe in yourself and find your entryway and then pull your chair up and demand space. That's what I did. And even for the longest time, I was the only woman in the room, much younger than everyone else. And at a certain point, that was really my magic. And I stood in that, and I tried to be as fearless as possible, but we have a long way to go. And I always tell people, you know, this is a female plant that gives us this flower, that gives us this fruit, that gives us these molecules. And it is so important that women are not just a part of the industry, but leading and running the industry, I think, because that's a female plant.
So amazing. Your thoughts on this? And speaking of which, where are your plants sourced from?
Well, when it comes to our cannabis, obviously everything is sourced through the compliant market in California, mostly NorCal, outdoor grown. And then all of our hemp is sourced from Oregon. It's really important to me when it comes to making finished products that the cannabis, especially the extracts, be in its highest form. And I'm really a proponent of outdoor, mainly because it's sustainable. And at the end of the day, it's really the extract and cannabis being our active ingredient, if you will, everything is about that starting product and where it comes from. So we really pride ourselves on sourcing, you know, from the West Coast.
And you're science-backed. And I understand you have no GMOs in your products.
No GMOs, no HMOs, nothing bad. You know, the reality is that I was diagnosed bipolar in my early 20s, and I use my products to treat my bipolar disorder without, you know, traditional pharmaceuticals. And so I really believe in a philosophy that you're using cannabinoids all day, every day, from maybe a pain lotion, maybe I'll pop a gummy in the afternoon, maybe I'll have a joint at night, maybe I'll take a CBN gummy to sleep or have a tincture. I'm always using my products. And with that being said, they have to be safe. They have to be clean. This is my medicine. This is what gets me through every day. And so it's really important to me, not just that the cannabis be clean and safe and lab tested and accurately dosed, but that the other ingredients are too. And I think that's a really important thing when it comes to my products at Kush Queen, everything being as gentle as possible, everything being as organic and natural as possible. And then of course, down to the packaging, you know, trying to source as much of our packaging in the US. There is such a beautiful thing about cannabis being this American export, this thing that's so uniquely California and American. And I really pride myself on being a small business owner, being a millennial, and really trying to be transparent and just make the company as good as possible down to the culture here too. You know, it's not just about great products. It's about how we treat people. It's about everything that we do every day, because we are building an industry, you know,
a lifestyle, a way of life, of wellness, yeah. Green and green. And
yes. Green. As good. You know, that's the thing about cannabis. Like, she makes me my best, greatest self. And that is what I just try to give back to her every single day, because without this plant and without these molecules, I have no idea if I would even be alive, honestly. And to have it all topped off with the fact that I get to live my passion every day, I really just try to be as committed as possible to that same, you know, thing that she gave me day in, day out, even though, again, you know, it's easier said than done.
Why don't we get into some of your product lines and what you are offering people through your company?
Yeah. So Kush Queen started with the bath bomb. We really were the THC bath bomb in all the dispensaries. We pride ourselves on creating this beautiful handmade product that's a full body topical experience. So unlike just placing a little cannabis oil where it hurts, your skin is your biggest organ. You're absorbing the cannabinoids. You're absorbing the essential oils, having this entourage effect. And we find that people have incredible results with sleep, with mood, and really see a huge increase in wellness, because there's so many benefits to bathing, not just bathing in cannabis.
The whole combination's perfection.
It all works better together. You get in the tub, you soak, you get out, you feel like you got a full body massage, but you didn't pay $85 and have to go to a spa. You get to roll right into your bed and have the best night's sleep. After the success of the bath bombs, we came up with a patent pending nanotechnology that allows the cannabis to go from oil to water. So we have some advanced formulations in some of our pain lotion, our lube. We have psychoactive cosmetics in the dispensaries that actually get you high through your skin. We have a primer, we have a setting spray. I really love making products that no one would ever expect to see in a dispensary. That is what I do, because everybody buys weed, everybody buys a joint, everybody who has a vape, those products sell themselves. But when you are making these more sophisticated finished products that, you know, sit in the wellness and beauty space, I really believe you can bring new people to cannabis. And that is what I care about the most, is bringing new people through products that are unexpected, that are approachable. Because the truth of the matter is, not everyone is going to smoke a joint, even if weed is legal. So I just love making the products, and I love having a line that I think is a great expression of the plant and all of these crazy ways that no one thinks about it.
You're definitely an innovator, and you've gotten some accolades. Haven't you won a few awards specifically for your bath bomb and for what have you won? Yeah.
We've won multiple cannabis cups throughout the year for the bath bomb, for the pain lotion. I was Dope Magazine Social Media Influencer of the Year back in 2017. We won Best Primer from Refinery 29 Beauty Innovator Award. We've been nominated for other awards from beauty publications with that. I'm nominated this year for Entrepreneur of the Year. You know, the awards are a really great honor, and it feels great to be seen. And I feel like it's really just the start of hopefully, you know, a long legacy. Cause I always tell people there's a lot of people here for just the short term, just to get in, get out. But I'm really not here for a good time. I'm here for a long time. And for me, when people hear Kush Queen, I hope that one day they think of my legacy, because it really is that serious to me. And it's so much more than just awards and followers. It's about making products that change people's lives and living authentically and being a good leader in a space that I don't think has many, and just saying like, this is me and I'm a softie, but I'm a bad bitch at the same time. And I love cannabis. And I just, I live from that, you know, and it's rare, but it's real. And I just think that it's important too, because not everybody is going to be, you know, a CEO of like these CEOs, like you see, you know, not everyone's going to wear a suit. Not everyone's going to be about the numbers. You know, I'm about the numbers too. I'm a businesswoman, but I'm about so much more than that. And that's the same thing for Kush Queen in the products and in everything we do.
How do you find that being a beauty industry insider for 15 years of your life and working with some of the biggest names, how do you feel that has helped you build this brand and in the products you offer and how you approach it? Because that side, that industry hasn't quite done the crossover into the cannabis industry. It keeps trying. I keep failing. Seeing companies trying to do it, but you're one of the few successful ones that have done it. So how do you feel that's played into your innovation when it comes to your beauty products?
Well, believe it or not, the beauty industry trying to make crappy cannabis beauty products and trying to make hemp seed oil, calling it CBD, they are my inspiration. You know, I've been a beauty consumer since I was a little kid. You know, I got my first facial when I was like 11, like what? And I live and breathe beauty and wellness products outside of being the owner of Kush Queen. So for me, these products, I know these products and I know this experience. And more than that, I know what drives a woman to the beauty industry, which is to feel better and look better. And the reality is a lot of these products don't make us look better and they most certainly make us feel nothing. And that is the power of cannabis and beauty. It's actually beauty that changes your consciousness. It's beauty that makes you feel better from the inside out. And then it's the system, this powerful endocannabinoid system that is actually making our bodies more in balance, thus making us more beautiful, not to mention the power of CBD as an anti-inflammatory and inflammation being the root of so much bad shit when it comes to beauty. So I really just live and breathe this. And I think that the truth, if I'm being real honest with you, is when people started to call Kush Queen a beauty brand in mainstream publications, I wasn't expecting that. You know, yeah. I was building a cannabis company. I always thought we were a cannabis company. And then because it was a personal care product and because of the type of products they were, we got to ride this wave of CBD beauty, of cannabis beauty. And I'm honored and I've loved being a part of it. It's been a joy for me. It's just been a great surprise because again, I've just been living my life. I had no idea that Sephora would be like, let's sell weed leaf things. You know, like who would have thought that? You know, I didn't think that.
You've been called the Mariah Carey of weed by Elle magazine. Did you ever see that one coming either?
No. And I like to say that it's like the greatest compliment and also the biggest insult. Cause like Mariah Carey is known as a diva and I'm just like, oh Lord, but that was a really big moment for me in my career. And I grew up, you know, reading Elle. I found a picture of myself the other day. I'm moving. And so I found this picture of me and I'm laying on my bed and I'm probably like 12 and I have all these magazines on my bed and, you know, to see my brand in those magazines and to really get to be a part of that is something that I didn't really ever see for myself. And really in the early days of my career, I spent a lot of time going to New York and trying to talk to these editors about cannabis. And I was thrown out of a lot of them, like literally thrown out, like Harper's Bazaar. This editor was like, I thought they were going to get security for me, you know, at one point. So for me, it's also to see the pendulum swing, to see the progress, to see the change, the fact that they want me to even be in there is really truly an honor. And then Elle magazine is like, you know, it, and then forever I get to, I'll tell my kids one day I was the Mariah Carey of weed and they will say, oh mom, no.
It's great. And then
with that, what are your plans moving forward? Do you have anything in development you want to talk about, or what's next for your brand?
Yeah, we've been developing our 20 shades of color cosmetics for the past few years. We paused them because of COVID. Obviously, you cannot match people's skin tone with COVID. So essentially, they're 20 shades of fully THC-infused foundation with nanoparticles. So you cover your face and your neck, and you actually get high for a good 2 to 3 hours, like you hit a vape. And for me, I really see this place in our dispensaries, in our regulated market in California, that I think even the dispensaries aren't seeing, which is the fact that Sephora is selling fake CBD stuff with pot leaves, and they're doing it for a reason. It's because they're trying to bring in that customer, and we should be bringing those customers into compliant, regulated dispensaries where we can give them real products that are lab tested and safe and accurately dosed. And so I really have this grand vision to build a beauty counter in a lot of the best dispensaries in California and really start showing the industry how we can sell products that people don't necessarily come in for and transform this world of cannabis for women, because especially like going on dates, having social anxiety before you go to a business meeting. I mean, these poor moms stuck at home right now with their kids during COVID who maybe can't smoke or don't want to smoke around their kids. This would be the perfect product. So we're working on that. We're also, you know, planning some multi-state expansion. To this day, our cannabis products are still only in California. And that was a very intentional decision because of how many of these licensing deals go south. And when I license the brand to someone else in Canada or wherever, I lose my control. So I'm really excited to be finding partnerships and growing the business state to state, because it really is important to me that we always sell THC products, that we aren't just a hemp company. You know, someone called me the other day, the owner of Kush Queen CBD boutique. And I was pissed, you know, honestly, because I am not the owner of a CBD company. I am the owner of a cannabis company. So I feel like the future's bright. I'm really excited, hopefully, for some progress in the next few years with federal legalization. And I was here before it was legal. I was here the day Prop 64 passed. I was here the day everything switched over. I was here when the regs came into effect, and I want to be here on that day when America finally comes correct and legalizes this plant and opens up access for everybody.
Olivia, such a pleasure to speak with you. And we were glad you were here on W420 Radio Network. Thank you so much for your time. If you missed any of this great interview with Olivia Alexander, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. I'm David Katzmeier, your host, and today we're talking about the ever-extending wave of legalization. Not an easy wave to surf sometimes. It's a product of work and perseverance from dedicated people who want to bring improvement to the laws, which are a little too heavy for the substance involved. We often think of the epicenter of all of this activity as being in the Golden Triangle of Humboldt County, California, and such, but the fact is this is a grassroots movement all across the nation. That brings us to our first state, Delaware. Coming up in just days is the Repeal Rally Day on December 4, 2021 in Delaware. This is a presentation of the Delaware Cannabis Policy Coalition, who continues the annual legacy of these events. The 2021 rallies were organized for Wilmington and Rehoboth, Delaware. These events are to rally support to influence Delaware legislatures to legalize adult use of cannabis. And it has done this for many states. Very much involved with Repeal Rally Day is the Delaware Cannabis Advocacy Network. And executive director of the network is here to talk about it, Zoe Paschel. Zoe joined Normal's Women Alliance in 2010. She helped with Philadelphia events and participated in the movement in states across the nation. She attended trainings with Students for a Sensible Drug Policy, Northeastern Institute of Cannabis, Americans for Safe Access, and you can find the Delaware Cannabis Advocacy Network at DelawareCannabis.org. So here to talk about the organization upcoming events, and more is Executive Director Zoe Patchell. Zoe, welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, David. We appreciate it.
Lot to talk about and a lot going on. But what a fortuitous time for you to join the conversation here as we're going into the rally for December 4th happening in Wilmington and Rehoboth, Delaware. So Zoe, why don't you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah, so we're hosting our 7th annual Repeal Day rally on Saturday, December 4th. We actually organize this rally every year on the first Saturday in December to mark the anniversary of the repeal of alcohol prohibition to specifically protest the equally harmful and failed policy of cannabis prohibition. So we use this historic day to raise awareness and educate the public as well as our lawmakers about the many similarities between alcohol and cannabis prohibition. And we try to highlight the dire need to repeal cannabis prohibition in our state of Delaware as well as nationwide. I think most people can agree that alcohol prohibition was a disastrous policy that was clearly government overreach. You know, it simply, it didn't work. It didn't stop anyone from drinking. It didn't eliminate the demand for alcohol. It certainly didn't eliminate the supply for alcohol. It created public safety problems. And it basically gave way to organized crime as we know it. It also created consumer safety issues and significant public health hazards with bathtub gin and other tainted products. And enforcement was increasingly costly and expensive to taxpayers. And cannabis prohibition is the exact same failed and costly policy with the same inherent effects. It doesn't work. It doesn't reduce the use, supply, or demand of cannabis. Here in the state of Delaware, we have over 17% of Delaware adults admit to being consumers. You know, the thriving illicit market creates problems and crime in our community. It creates a preventable public health issue with contaminated products like the tainted vape scare that we saw 2 years ago, or even cannabis laced with other drugs. And it comes with an inexcusable human and economic cost. And it turns otherwise law-abiding citizens into criminals here in our state and nationwide. There's been hundreds of thousands of victims of the war on cannabis. And December 5th marks the 88th anniversary of the repeal of alcohol prohibition. Yet we're going on the 85th year of cannabis prohibition. So it's really important for us to use this day to help educate our state and the public about the repeated mistakes that they're making by continuing the enforcement of cannabis prohibition. So this year, we've expanded the event to include two rally locations. We have a Northern Delaware rally location, which will take place in Wilmington at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday. And the event initially started in Wilmington back in 2014. So we tend to try to always keep it in Wilmington. But this year we've added a Southern Delaware location. Delaware's not the biggest state, but it's big enough where not everybody can make it to one single rally location. So we've added a second rally location this year in Rehoboth Beach. And that rally will start at 3:30 p.m., and we're hoping that people will join us in Wilmington and then hopefully also join us in Rehoboth later that afternoon. And we're going to have speeches by local community leaders and advocates that are leading the charge on cannabis prohibition and cannabis legalization. And we are going to have a number of individuals that have recently had a cannabis offense as well as individuals who recently did a significant amount of time for simple cannabis offenses here in the state of Delaware. So they'll be coming to our rally to share their stories of hope and perseverance after being a victim of cannabis prohibition. And we'll also have a call to action where participants can actually take action right at our rally by making a call to their elected officials here in Delaware, asking them to prioritize our current active bill, HB 150, that would legalize cannabis for all adults 21 and older here in the state of Delaware. So we're asking people to come out and join us and rally to end prohibition again.
You drew some great analogies between what we're going through now and the debacle of alcohol prohibitions and the problems that led to that and the criminalization of people and organized crime involved with it and all of that. And here we're talking about a substance that is far less harmful than alcohol. We don't have organizations against marijuana driving because we don't have people slamming into other cars because they had a little bit of weed or something like that. And we also know that marijuana has so many varied uses. And there's research going on at medical school in Harvard for using marijuana derivatives as a treatment for cancer. And these tests are going on right now. And they've had some success in treating tumors on rats. So with all of that going on, we find that this is a war of attrition to repeal these prohibitive bits of legislation that have plagued us ever since it became a federally controlled substance. And in your state of Delaware, you've made some strides already, even though we have a way to go. Let's talk about medicinal use in Delaware. What's going on with that? Is it now finally legal?
Yes, Delaware actually legalized medical cannabis back in 2011. However, what happened at the time was the governor at the time had immediately suspended the program. And it wasn't until a few years later that they decided to finally start issuing medical cannabis cards to patients. However, it wasn't until 2015 that they finally opened up the very first medical cannabis dispensary here in the state of Delaware. So it was a long, hard fight that we fought to try to fully implement the 2011 program to open up the dispensaries. However, the medical marijuana program here in the state of Delaware continues to keep that program with tight regulations and under significant control. Delaware's medical cannabis patients actually paid the highest in the nation for medical cannabis here in the state of Delaware. And it's because we have major supply issues because the medical program won't license more participants here in the state of Delaware. So right now there's currently too few market participants. We only have five operational dispensaries that have service over 15,000 patients here in the state of Delaware. So that's five providers for the entire state. And there's a lot of problems that are happening with the medical cannabis program. And actually, the medical cannabis providers here in the state of Delaware have decided to fight against our cannabis legalization effort to try to maintain control of their oligopoly for medical cannabis here in the state of Delaware. So we're seeing a lot of problems with the medical cannabis here in the state of Delaware, but we've had a number of additional amendments that have been passed since 2011, including pediatric medical cannabis under Riley's law. We also have seen bills passed that reduce the control over what doctors can prescribe or recommend medical cannabis for. There's been a number of amendments that have increased the qualifying conditions. And so we've seen some progress, but the medical cannabis patients here in Delaware actually have one of the worst programs in the entire country because of the state control over the market participants.
Good heavens. And I know that advocacy groups such as yours have played an important role in encouraging what changes have come in the status of medicinal use. But then there was a long fight also in getting legislatures to address the criminalization of Delaware. Now, how did decriminalization finally come about in the first state?
So our organization, Delaware Can, alongside Delaware Normal, led the charge on statewide decriminalization, which began when we started in 2013, but it inevitably did not pass until 2015. However, that bill is somewhat limited. It only decriminalized up to an ounce of cannabis flower, and it doesn't include the many cannabis products that consumers often possess or consume, including edibles, concentrates, oils, hash, none of that is decriminalized yet here in the state of Delaware. And even worse, law enforcement is currently using a series of loopholes to circumvent the decriminalization policy. And basically, they're continuing to arrest people on a discretionary basis. And what we're seeing is 127% increase in possession-only offenses here in the state of Delaware post-decriminalization, based on numbers from the Delaware Statistical Analysis Center. And we're obviously seeing, with those increased arrests, increased racial disparities. So prior to decriminalization, the ACLU noted that Delaware has about Delaware is three times more likely to arrest a black consumer than a white consumer. Post-decriminalization, that number has gone up over four times. So we're continuing to see arrests here in the state of Delaware and searches. Law enforcement use cannabis and the odor of cannabis as probable cause to conduct searches of people's property and themselves, as well as strip searches here in the state of Delaware. And people are still being arrested for all types of offenses that should otherwise be covered under the decriminalization statute. But with law enforcement discretion, they're able to apply either misdemeanor cannabis offenses and even in some cases, felony cannabis offenses, including felony tampering of evidence, felony endangering the welfare of a child, felony intent to distribute without conclusive proof that it has anything to do with drug dealing, and then, of course, felony drug dealing for nonviolent providers that are just basically fulfilling the demand that the over 17% of Delaware adult consumers need. Because, I mean, we have this significant population of cannabis consumers in the state of Delaware. Like I said earlier, cannabis prohibition hasn't reduced the use, supply, or demand of cannabis. So those 150,000 Delawareans need to be able to get their cannabis from somewhere. It's a disastrous policy. It's a failed policy. It's a very costly policy, and it has an inexcusable human and economic cost. We have to repeal cannabis prohibition.
Zoe, I know you work as a paralegal for a law firm, and you've seen a lot of these cases actually come through the office where you work. So you have firsthand knowledge as a witness to all of these things. Now, of course, we're indebted to law enforcement personnel on a daily basis. We would have anarchy and chaos if it were not for the people who laid their lives on the line and protect us. But unfortunately, there are these instances where some in enforcement will try to legislate with force and try to impose their own opinion on what should be the law of the land. So there is still some more work to do out there in terms of bringing justice through legalization to level the playing field so they won't have tools to bring against selected people who violate what is now against the law. So do you currently have any projects active right now where you're supporting a bill that will go before the legislation of Delaware?
Yes. So Delaware has its third iteration of a cannabis legalization bill. That's a current active pending bill right now, House Bill 150. And like I said, that's actually the third bill that Delaware has taken up over the last 6 years. And this is a little known fact, but Delaware was actually the first state in the entire country to garner a simple majority on a cannabis legalization market bill back in 2018. However, Delaware state constitution requires that any bill involving legalization of the market requires a three-fifths supermajority, which is similar to what on a federal level would be kind of like a filibuster. It has a vote requirement higher than most other bills. So because of that constitutional vote requirement, we ended up failing that vote by four votes back in 2018. And of course, the only states that had passed legalization prior to that did so via voter initiative, and Delaware does not have voter initiative. So our bill has to go through the legislature, and it has to pass with a 3/5 supermajority in order for Delaware to become a legalized state. So we're working on that measure now. Like I said, this is the third version of the adult use cannabis legalization bill that's been out. And this is by far the best version that has been introduced in our legislature. It actually legalizes 10 currently illegal acts pertaining to cannabis, and including, you know, obviously the possession, use, and purchasing of cannabis, and it covers all the different products that aren't covered under decriminalization. It also ends the felony charges for cannabis, accessory sales, manufacturing, distribution. So that's kind of like your head shops or, you know, glass blowers who are currently facing felony offenses here in the state of Delaware simply for selling a bowl or a bong. So it eliminates 10 current illegal acts pertaining to cannabis. It provides for expungement for all past cannabis offenses involving possession. And it also ends civil asset forfeiture for cannabis possession here in the state of Delaware, which is a really big deal because even with decriminalization, law enforcement are allowed to seize the product. And of course, under civil asset forfeiture, they can also seize any money that is in possession of the person that's also in possession of cannabis, even for decriminalization amounts of cannabis. So it's really important that we also repeal the civil asset forfeiture for cannabis. And it also, and one of the most important things is that it eliminates the use for law enforcement to be able to use cannabis as probable cause based on the odor of cannabis alone. And that, you know, clearly circumvents our Fourth Amendment constitutional protections from unreasonable search and seizure. So this is going to be a really big piece of this bill. You know, cannabis prohibition is the gateway to the criminal justice system. And those four things alone are going to significantly help end people going into the criminal justice system. It also promotes a fair and equitable industry and establishes an entire social equity section, which carves an avenue for legal participation in the industry by individuals and communities that have been previously adversely impacted by cannabis prohibition. So we're really excited about the social equity licenses that have been included in the bill and all the social equity provisions, including discount application and licensing, lower capital requirements, as well as technical and financial assistance for qualified social equity applicants. And it also, HB 150 also establishes micro license for categories including cultivation and manufacturing to make sure that small local businesses are able to compete in this new industry here in the state of Delaware. So we're really excited about a lot of the provisions. There's a lot in HB 150. There's a lot of moving pieces to it, but we're expected to get a vote sometime in 2022 when the Delaware legislature reconvenes. And right now we've already passed committee in the House, and we're just awaiting a House vote. So we're anticipating that vote would come sometime between January and March of 2022 once the Delaware legislature reconvenes.
Well, thank goodness for organizations such as the Delaware Cannabis Advocacy Network and other organizations with whom you coordinate. Have you seen any movement in this legislature? Does it look like any of the members in Delaware Congress are on board with us so far? How's the prospect look for winning them over?
Yes. So, like I said, we already have a simple majority of Delaware legislators that support this. And, of course, public opinion is at 61% here in Delaware. So we're really asking Delaware citizens to contact their elected officials. Like I said, we don't have voter initiatives, so unfortunately, unlike New Jersey citizens who got to go to the ballot and vote on cannabis legalization, we don't have that ability here in the state of Delaware. So the 61% of Delawareans that support cannabis legalization need to contact their elected officials. We're really close. We're only a couple votes that have not been confirmed right now in order to pass the House with HB 150. It's looking pretty good. We just need, you know, everyone to speak out and stand up and, you know, let their elected officials know that we need to prioritize HB 150 when the Delaware legislature returns to session in 2022.
Indeed. Well, Zoe Patchell, Executive Director of the Delaware Cannabis Advocacy Network, I thank you for coming on the show and telling our listeners about this. Folks, if you missed this interview, you can listen to this and other shows in our archives at W420 Radio Network. We have all our shows there. You can learn more about Zoe, link through to the Delaware Cannabis website, and find out about this. And if you're hearing the show in the archives, do follow up and visit their sites to get an update on the status of what's happening with these events, these pending bills, and more. I'm David Katzmeier, America's Cannabis Conversation. Thank you for listening.
W420RadioNetwork.com.